Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
From the beginning, I've said that I would continue on as long as there was a viable path to victory. Tonight, I'm sorry to say, it appears that path has been foreclosed. Together, we left it all on the field in Indiana. We gave it everything we've got. But the voters chose another path. And so, with a heavy heart, but with boundless optimism for the long-term future of our nation, we are suspending our campaign.
I have to tell you that I've competed all my life, competitive person. All my life, I've been in competitions, different competitions, whether it's sports or business or now for 10 months politics. And I have to tell you that I have met some of the most incredible competitors that I have ever competed against right here on the Republican Party. You know, we started off with that 17 number. And just so you understand, Ted Cruz, I don't know if he likes me or if he doesn't like me, but he is one hell of a competitor. He is a tough, smart guy. And he has got an amazing future. He's got an amazing future. So I want to congratulate Ted. And I know how tough it is. It's tough.
I've seen the presidency up close from two different perspectives, and I think I know what it takes. And I don't think we can take a risk on a loose cannon like Donald Trump running our country. You know, Donald Trump has said it's okay for other countries to get nuclear weapons. I think that's just downright dangerous. He has said wages are too high. I think we need to have a raise for the American people, raise the minimum wage, get wages back going up. I think when he says women should be punished for having abortions, that is, you know, just beyond anything that I can imagine. I think most women can imagine.
He did walk that back.
Well, he's a loose cannon. I mean, he's somebody who has said so many things, and I'm sure he'll be scrambling and his advisors will be scrambling, but he's already said all of these things. He says climate change is a Chinese hoax, and I think it's real, and we've got to pull the world together to deal with it. So you can go down a long list, some of which he's tried to bob and weave a little bit, but I think it's a risk. I think he is a loose cannon, and loose cannons tend to misfire.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. That was, of course, Ted Cruz announcing he has withdrawn from the race. Donald Trump crowing about his presumptive nominee-ness, and then, of course, Hillary Clinton talking about the danger, the loose cannon that is Donald Trump. The question is, how did we get here? I mean, what happened? Donald Trump was supposed to be a joke, right? I mean, as Barack Obama put it, he just entered the race to promote his hotel chain, to get his name up in lights, the way Donald Trump has done for, well, quite a long time. So how did he end up being the Republican nominee? What does this say about the Republican Party? What does it say about, well, the American people? Today I want to discuss the phenomenon that is Donald Trump and encourage you to call it as well at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I'm entitling today's show Racism, Nihilism, and Money, the Republican Party of Donald Trump. To understand Donald Trump, I think you have to go back and understand, well, the origins of the modern Republican Party. Where do we come from? People forget that the Republican Party was once the party of liberals. It was the party of Abraham Lincoln, the party of Teddy Roosevelt. In fact, the earliest progressive party was Teddy Roosevelt's progressive party when the Republican Teddy Roosevelt decided to run as a third party candidate against William Howard Taft. Well, the Depression started to change some of this. Franklin Delano Roosevelt obviously was reaching out to working class people, and certainly that started moving the Democrats in a more liberal direction. But the modern Republican Party really begins with the Civil Rights Act, when Lyndon Johnson said, "I am signing the South away from Democrats for a generation." Well, he was right, except that it's more like two generations. In 1964, when Lyndon Johnson, a Southern Democrat himself from Texas, decided to allow African Americans to have true full participation in American political life, understanding there's still systemic racism, but it was still a major, major leap forward from Jim Crow laws into, well, voting. He knew that it would hurt Democrats in the South. And so began a slow but inexorable process that Republicans took advantage of. In fact, Richard Nixon famously called it the Southern Strategy. And in 1972, he built the coalition of former Republicans, along with white Southern racists, to come to a landslide victory in 1972. Jimmy Carter may have been the last gasp of the old Democratic South, when people, I guess, assuming that he would be like most white Southerners, and that is anti-black, when the South actually came together in 1976 to vote for Jimmy Carter. Well, Jimmy Carter was not that kind of Democrat. He was a Democrat that actually believed in civil rights. And, well, by the time we get to Bill Clinton, another Southerner from Arkansas, already the South had started to melt away. That process is now complete. Today, the Southern white racists that were Democrats are all Republicans. Many senators just simply changed parties. In other cases, liberal Democratic senators like Al Gore of Tennessee were voted out of office. But it's not just the South, of course. It's a whole host of working class white people, more uneducated working class white people, that forms the basis of Donald Trump's support. They used to be called Ronald Reagan Democrats because Ronald Reagan was, in this whole process, beginning with Richard Nixon and continuing all the way up through Bill Clinton, the Republicans were grabbing the poor and middle-class white people who didn't like blacks and didn't like immigrants and didn't like foreigners and didn't like people of different religions, and pushing and pulling all these racists into the Republican Party. And it was intentional. It was quite intentional. Ronald Reagan would talk about welfare queens, you know, with a wink and a nod. It was very clear. It was a way to get anger against black people to get him votes. George Bush Sr. famously put forward the Willie Horton ad against Michael Dukakis. These very dark ideas of African Americans and criminality that scared white folks into voting for him. Indeed, racism has really formed the basis of the modern Republican Party. But it's not enough, because Republicans have always, you can go back to William McKinley, you can go back to the turn of the 20th century to find that Republicans have been looking out for big business. Calvin Coolidge, Herbert Hoover, you always have Republicans looking out for business. And it was this uneasy marriage of wealthy business interests and working class white racists that formed the base of today's Republican Party. Ronald Reagan added one more. He added evangelicals. Many of that, there's overlap with the white racists, but basically people who were intolerant of other religions, and added that to the Republican Party that basically, you know, provided them with electoral victory for quite a long time. But America's changing. Frankly, the white population is getting to be less and less as a percentage of the total American population. One of the reasons why we could elect President Obama was because African Americans and Latinos and Asian Americans and immigrants formed a good chunk of the American electorate and overwhelmingly voted for Democrats. Also, the gender gap grew. Republicans would focus on the traditional anti-feminist ideas of women obeying their husbands, staying at home. They didn't care about women's rights to choose what happened to their own body. And frankly, you can go back to Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas to see that, well, women's concerns about everything from sexual harassment to working for equal pay were not concerns that Republicans had. So thus begins women, minorities, leaving the Republican Party. Although the Republican Party is consolidating more and more with working class white people. Obviously not all white people. I guess I'm white, and I certainly am a Democrat. But a hefty chunk, and particularly uneducated. The intellectuals stuck with the Democrats. And young people, today's young people, the Obama generation, millennials, also tend to be liberal. They're the ones who believe in gay rights, who believe in women's equality, who believe that everyone should have a chance to live. It's kind of the older white races. But there's still a good number of them around. So what caused a divorce, this great divorce, between the business Wall Street class of the Republican Party, the ones that really, the Republican Party, that's been their interest, that's been their policies for many years, and the base, the evangelicals, the southern white racists, the people who are worried about their economic future and frankly are afraid of minorities or immigrants? Well, Donald Trump has taken this dividing part of the Republican Party. And last night in Indiana, he put a metal stake through its heart. And the reason it happened is that the Republican Party has been serving the interests of the Wall Street class while frankly lying to the working class whites who form the majority of its voting base, not the majority of its financial base, but the majority of its voting base. See, the people paying for the Republican Party, that's the Koch brothers. That's various wealthy billionaires who fund Republican campaigns. And because they provide the money, Republicans have ignored their base, have ignored working class people of any stripe, and have promoted policies, policies like globalization, policies that encourage companies to outsource, policies that allow corporations to trod on ordinary Americans. They applauded Citizens United precisely because it allowed unlimited corporate money to go into Republican campaigns. They didn't give a damn what the voters wanted. They just wanted the money. And the money, they decided, would determine what the voters wanted. Well, Donald Trump put a lie to all of that. I give him credit. I don't know that he did it intentionally. I think he may have just stumbled upon it. And I certainly don't believe that he believes a word of what he has to say. But the phenomenon is a fascinating American political phenomenon. And we'll talk more about it after the break. If you want to join in the discussion, you know what to do. Give me a call, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Right back after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
We won with poorly educated. I love the poorly educated.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Indeed, Donald Trump does love the poorly educated. They are the backbone of his support. But to understand where he is, you really have to understand the modern Republican Party. It is three elements. It is racism, nihilism, and money. I talked about racism, very much part of the foundation of the modern Republican Party. They usually do it with dog whistles, you know, welfare queen, states' rights, euphemisms, right? But Donald Trump said, who needs the euphemisms? Mexicans are rapists. Ban all Muslims. The list goes on and on. So that's part of it. The other thing that's very, very important is money. Republicans have been striving really hard to get more and more and more money by fewer and fewer donors in politics. Bernie Sanders rightly praises the millions of donors he has. Hillary Clinton has millions of small donors. Republican Party is owned by very, very few people. The Koch brothers, Sheldon Adelson comes to mind. There are a few very rich people that fund their campaigns. And so the Republican Party does the bidding of these very rich people. Right here in Virginia, we have a public university named George Mason. The law school is going to change their name to Scalia Law School. Not because of any principle, not because of any love for Scalia, but because they got $30 million. $10 million from the Koch brothers, $20 million from an anonymous donor. They won't even consult their alumni. Doesn't matter. Money talks. And that's how the Republican Party has controlled itself for a long time. In fact, unless you're independently wealthy, like Donald Trump, all you have to do is go where the money goes. And that's why Republicans tend to support proposals like tax cuts for the super rich, no restrictions on Wall Street, massive corporate donations. All of that, you see, is part of the donor class, not part of the working class. But there's a third element as well. The third element is nihilism. This matters too. The Republican Party has become the party of no. It started with Newt Gingrich in the Clinton years, and it definitely blossomed in the Obama years, when 1 month after President Obama became president, the Republican leadership, Mitch McConnell, said, we are going to make him fail. And if our country has to fail with it, so be it. Let America die as long as we harm Obama. Nothing will happen. We will filibuster everything. We won't work with him on climate change. We'll just refuse it. We won't work with him on making health care better, compromise, and try to put in Republican ideas with Democratic ideas. No, we'll just say no. We won't even let him approve a Supreme Court justice. The Republicans became the party of no. The Republicans became determined that government would fail. And when government failed, then they, the party of nihilism, the party of anarchy, the party of no government, would get votes. In other words, they would kill the baby and then say, see, you can't trust government with the baby. Vote for us. We don't believe in babies. Okay, bad metaphor. But you get the point. This combination of racism, nihilism, and money has been dividing the Republican Party underneath the surface for some time. The voters, who are all about hating difference, hating gays and hating blacks and hating immigrants, weren't getting what they want. They weren't getting economically what they want. The wealthy class was getting what the donors ordered, but they weren't working together. We'll talk about how Donald Trump used this right after this.
Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking about the phenomenon that is Donald Trump. I do encourage you to call in. Call in early, 888-488-6275. That's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-M-A-R-K. Lee Atwater, famous Republican nasty operative, was discussing the Republican Southern strategy in 1981. I started to read what he said for shock value, but I think I'll just avoid the N-word. But when I say N-word, Lee Atwater is using the real word. Just keep that in mind. He said, quote, you start out in 1954 by saying N-word, N-word, N-word. By 1968, you can't say N-word. That hurts you. Backfire. So you say stuff like forced busing, states' rights, and all that stuff, and you're getting so abstract. Now you're talking about cutting taxes. We want to cut this is much more abstract than even the busing thing, and a hell of a lot more abstract than N-word. So Republicans know, everyone knows, anyone who's studied the slightest bit of American history knows that the Republican, modern Republican Party was built on racism. And that takes you from 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, well into the 90s, and really well into today. Hence the specific hatred against Barack Obama. Look at the fact that, well, Donald Trump talked about the birther movement. This is important. This matters. When you have someone, particularly now, a nominee of a major party, who's willing to make up something that he knows to be complete BS, a complete lie, and worse than a lie, a nasty, nasty bit of libel, to challenge the birth of a president who no one in their right mind disputes was born in the United States, tells you something, and that it was believed, tells you something about, well, both Donald Trump and the modern American Republican Party. But it's more than that. Because to understand the differences, what's splitting America, the Republican Party, apart between the so-called establishment and the base, is that the base bought into all the racism, bought into the hatred of people of different religions, bought into the hatred of LGBT people, bought into the anti-feminism towards women, bought into the racism. And that stoked them. That got them excited. That got them to the polls. But many of them, racist though they are, cared about economic issues. I mean, polls consistently showed, for example, that the vast majority of Americans supported Barack Obama's and Bill Clinton's plan to raise taxes on the wealthy. Very few Americans earn more than $250,000 or $400,000 a year. And so the Republican base, along with the Democratic base, supported this. Heck, even rich liberals supported it because they believed that they should pay their fair share. Poor liberals certainly supported it. Poor conservatives supported it. It was only the rich conservatives, a very tiny group of people, the millionaires and billionaires, Bernie Sanders might call them, that opposed these tax cuts for their own selfish purposes. They had millions and wanted more. They opposed these tax cuts. But they could implement their policy. They could get the Republican Party to stand firm. They could get every Republican to vote their way, and none of them to vote for the way that their base wanted, through money. See, the millionaires and billionaires may only be the top 1% or so. That's very few votes, but it is a lot of money. So by using money, and by using it at all levels of politics, not just at the presidential level. In fact, money at the presidential level is least effective. The billions that, the millions and billions, whatever, that the Koch brothers or others want to spend on the presidential race is wasted. Why? Because every American knows who the president is. Every American has an opinion on the president. And most Americans actually do vote in presidential years. So that money's kind of wasted. That's one of the reasons why Democrats tend to win and have won the presidency, and I think will win this fall. Heck, we even won in 2000 when Al Gore beat George Bush, both in the popular vote and in the electoral vote, had Florida's votes been allowed to be counted. But the money works in lower races. It works better with senators. It works even better with members of Congress. And it works best with the people that you don't know, the people who are in state legislatures, people like me. And I assure you, I don't get any money from these people. That's who it works best with. Quick, name who represents you in the state house, in your state senate. Do you know who it is? You don't? Well, then you're in good company. More than 90% of Americans can't name who represents them at the state level. So that's the perfect place for massive billionaire money. Koch brothers spend $100 million or whatever on the president. They're not going to move the needle very much. but they spent $100 million on thousands of state legislators across the country, and bingo, they get all the ads. They're the ones on that are getting all the ads out, and you haven't even heard of the other ones, so you vote for them. That's how Republicans take over state legislatures. That's how they gerrymander congressional boundaries. That's why they control the House, even when Democrats get the most votes. That's very clever of the moneyed interests. And it also keeps them in line, you see, because these state legislators may want to do what their constituents want, but when determining whether they should do what 5,000 constituents want, or they can get $50,000 from a Koch brother, they take the money, because the money allows them to buy the political ads that will influence the 5,000. And in return, because it's clear quid pro quo, in return, they have to support the moneyed interests. So they support relaxing pollution measures. Yeah, their constituents might want clean air and clean water, but not the businesses that pollute the air and the water, because it's cheaper not to clean it up. It's cheaper just to throw your sludge in the river. It's cheaper just to belch your black smoke in the air. It's cheaper. And those companies will pay you to shut up about environmental regulation. They'll pay you to help them outsource stuff abroad and not make you have to pay American taxes. And so 3/4 of American corporations pay zero taxes. Outsourcing is cheap and easy and supported by the donor class, not supported by the uneducated working class racists that are the backbone of the Republican Party, but supported by the donor class, the so-called establishment Republicans, who may actually be socially liberal, but want that cash, want that money. And so money kept Republicans from doing what their voters wanted, and instead focused on doing what the donor class wanted. But then there's that third element, the nihilism, the party of no. You see, Republicans couldn't actually achieve anything because their whole mantra is government can't succeed. How can you have the government achieve anything if your goal is to shut the government down? To do what Grover Norquist said, which is make the government so small you could drown it in a bathtub. If government is the enemy, as Ronald Reagan proclaimed, if the worst thing you could hear is a government agent saying, I'm going to help you, then there was no way the Republicans could successfully make government better, could successfully use government to help people have better lives, to make college more affordable, to get health care, to provide affordable housing, to provide better retirements, to prevent jobs from going overseas. The government couldn't do any of that because Republicans don't believe in government. And since they don't believe in government, the best thing Republicans could do, the only thing Republicans could do, is shut the government down. That's why Ted Cruz is a pure modern-day Republican. Republicans want to shut the government down. They want to be elected so they can do nothing, so they can make the government do nothing. They don't want to help citizens have better lives. They want to have anarchy. Get the government out of your way. Let corporations rule. Let them pollute the air. Let them outsource jobs. Leave everybody alone. We should all go to Somalia, or be like Somalia, where guns aren't regulated, where people can shoot each other at will, where the government stays out of your lives entirely, except for your private life. Because you got the evangelical element there. So they do want government interference when it comes to your personal private decisions. No government to stop pollution. No government to make life easier for you. No government to provide for education or jobs. But we do need government to tell you who to marry. We do need government to censor your books. We do need government to prevent you from smoking some drug that gives you pleasure and doesn't harm anybody else. And we definitely need government to control women's bodies because we don't trust women to control it themselves. So they want no government unless it's controlling your private lives. And thus is the mixture of the donor class with the evangelical class. But then something happened. Trump happened. Trump is not controlled by the donor class. He is the donor class. They can't control him. He is them. Well, that's a problem for Republicans. Number two, he's calling them out. He's showing the wizard behind the curtain. Yeah, I buy politicians. I do them all the time. That's what we Republicans do. That's the heart of Republican Party. That's our politics. We buy and sell politicians. Everyone knows that. And thus, he and Bernie Sanders are saying the same thing. So he can't be bought by them. Plus, he's appealing to the populism. And he's doing so without the dog whistles. Bring back the N-word. Heck, Donald Trump's bringing back the Ku Klux Klan. Donald Trump is saying that Barack Obama wasn't born in the United States. Donald Trump is saying that all Mexicans are rapists. And some, he assumes, maybe are nice people. Donald Trump's making comments about Jews. Donald Trump is talking about women as sluts and bimbos and who knows what. Donald Trump is doing all the insults publicly that Republicans normally whisper because they know that people don't like to hear them said out loud. And he'll lie like a rug. I mean, on election day, he was accusing, this is crazy, it's crazy to even say, he was accusing Ted Cruz's father of being an associate of Lee Harvey Oswald, the John F. Kennedy assassin. And apparently one of his newspapers or son-in-law's newspapers or whatever, the National Enquirer, was posting something about that. Now, this is crazy. But truth doesn't matter to Donald Trump. See, I think Donald Trump is a fascinating character study. I actually don't believe he's racist. I think he's a pure narcissist. And he started talking, and he wants to be president, not to do anything, not to help the country, not to make America great again, but probably because he thinks he'd be really cool. It's a resume builder. Look, Mom, I'm president. If he were... He'd like to run for king because he'd like to wear a crown and sit on the throne, but you can't do that. So he runs for president. And he gets up there. He's promoting his reality show and says something negative about Mexicans. And lo and behold, the racist element of the Republican Party cheers him along. And like any good improvisational actor, he says the things that get the most cheers. And what gets the most cheers? Insults, hatred, division. Attacking one group of Americans and pitting them against another. That's what gets the base of the Republican Party riled up. Because they are angry. They are angry. And they're angry for the same reasons, frankly, that Bernie Sanders and, to a large extent, Hillary Clinton are talking about. They're angry because the working class is being left behind in America. Because jobs are being outsourced. Because the 1% is getting richer while the bottom 80% is getting poorer and the other 20% is staying about the same. That's all true. That's all true. But whereas Bernie Sanders supporters are talking about economic measures, things like paid family medical leave that Hillary Clinton's also talking about, things like getting more people covered by health care, things like taxing very rich people, things like raising minimum wage, economic measures to make them better off, Trump supporters recognize that those economic measures would help all Americans, not just whites. They'd help blacks, too. They'd help immigrants. They'd help Latinos. They'd help the other. And Donald Trump supporters are all about fighting the other. And you got to be really, really careful when you compare things to 1930s Germany. Got to be real careful about that. So I'm going to be careful. But I have to admit, particularly yesterday after talking about the Holocaust, I do see parallels to Germans who were seriously injured by the Great Depression, by France being vindictive in the Versailles Treaty. Germans were hurting by the hyperinflation of the 1930s. They had real, real problems. And, of course, some of them turned to socialism. Some of them turned to ways to help the economy be better. And others of them turned to Hitler. Because when you're angry and you're in pain, guess what? It's a lot easier for some reason for some people to blame someone who looks different, who has a different religion, has a different culture. It's much easier to blame them than to blame complex macroeconomic forces. I mean, Germany lost World War I. They couldn't really undo that. They couldn't really undo the Versailles Treaty. Globalization is tough to fight, folks. It is. We're becoming an interconnected world. I think there are ways to do it. I think Hillary Clinton's got some ideas. I think Bernie Sanders has some ideas. But I also think that America is going from a manufacturing to a service economy. And I don't know that any president could stop that, certainly not Donald Trump. There are things we can do. There are trade agreements. We can certainly discuss them, but they're complex. They're complicated. We have to make trade deals with industrialized nations like Japan and South Korea, but not with third world nations like Vietnam or Mexico, because they cost our jobs. But at the same time, we have to educate our population more. We have to provide more money for schools. It's complicated. Isn't it a lot easier just to blame the blacks, blame the Muslims, blame the Latinos, blame women, blame the Jews, blame somebody? And if you're uneducated and you're white and you're working class and you're an older person and you're male and you haven't had much experience working with people of diverse cultures, see, millennials escape this because they've gone to school, they've gone to college with people of different cultures. Women escape this because they're feminists. They recognize that they should have equal pay for equal work. People who are Jewish or gay or black or Latino or Asian or immigrants or Muslim, they often escape this. But there's still older white men, uneducated white men, straight and evangelical. Well, that's Trump's base. And it's not enough to win an election nationwide, but it is enough to win a contested Republican primary. And it's actually kind of sad. I want to talk about sort of the pathos of the Trump supporter when I come back. If you want to call in, here's your last chance. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back. I got just about a minute and a half to conclude here. I hope I've given some context to Donald Trump. It's important to understand that he didn't make all this stuff up. All he did was use the already undercurrents that were there. And now it's come to the fore. And now the Republican Party has to decide which direction it wants to go in. It is splitting apart before our eyes. And now we have a choice. I think Senator Elizabeth Warren put it best. I'm going to read a quote from her. She said, "Trump has built his campaign on racism, sexism, and xenophobia. There's more enthusiasm for him among leaders of the KKK than leaders of the political party he now controls. He incites supporters to violence, praises Putin, and according to a columnist who recently interviewed him, is, quote, cool with being called an authoritarian, unquote, and doesn't mind associations with history's worst dictators. He attacks veterans like John McCain, who were captured, puts our service members at risk by cheerleading illegal torture. In a world with ISIS militants and leaders like North Korean strongman Kim Jong-un conducting nuclear tests, he surrounds himself with a foreign policy team that is a collection of charlatans and puts out contradictory and nonsensical national security ideas that have been called incoherent and truly bizarre. What happens next will test the character of all of us, Republican, Democrat, and Independent. It will determine whether we move forward as one nation or splinter at the hands of one man's narcissism and divisiveness. I know which side I'm on." What side are you on? This is Mark Levine. I'll be back Monday.